This is Wednesday. And the special thing about Wednesday is we have Curtis Chong with us. And he joined this meeting at 2:30 and he already imparted some wonderful words of wisdom. And if you stay with us for the next hour, he's going to impart more of that. We're lucky enough to have him. And he always volunteers whenever I ask. And I thank him for that. I've never met Curtis, but I feel like he's a good friend of mine. And I would love for him to share with you a little bit about the hats he wears, where he lives, the work that he does, and to explain what he's going to be showing us and teaching us today. Curtis, you have the floor, and thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is the worst time of the day for everyone because it's, for me, right after lunch. So I'm going to be taking a nap for about 20 minutes, if that's okay.
As long as you don't snore.
Right. So my name is Curtis Chong, and I am a person who has been totally blind pretty much since birth. I was born a couple of months premature, weighing, I think, 2 pounds, 7 ounces or something like that. And my mother thought I was, they all thought I was going to die. So I got last rites from my mother was a Catholic, very staunch Catholic. And so I got last rites. So I always tell people that I have a free pass. I'm ready to go anytime. So I grew up in the state of Hawaii, and my parents and my grandparents were very traditional Chinese people. And I always think that it's a wonder that I managed to get out from under all of that, because mostly my family didn't think that a person without vision, and I'm not talking about figurative vision, but real sight, they figured pretty much in China they would just kill them or whatever. They couldn't do that in Hawaii, so they thought, they were not really sure what it was that a person of my situation would ever do growing up. Despite that, they managed to do quite nicely. They sent me off to a school for the, I mean, there was a school for the blind in Hawaii. It was a elementary school, grades 1 through 6. And at that time, the idea about using white canes was not quite as popular for younger kids as it is today. Nowadays, nobody even thinks, well, most people don't think too much about giving canes to little kids anymore. But I didn't get a cane till I was 14 years old. And that was when I went to a summer program that was operated by the State Rehabilitation Agency in Hawaii, which at that time was a complete 180-degree opposite of what it is today. So bad, in fact, that one of the classes we had when I was there was called group therapy. And it was headed up by a psychologist. And I suppose to give you some idea as to how much of a brat I was, and I really confess and apologize to everybody who knew me then that I was an awful, awful brat and a terrible, bad influence leader, because I didn't like the psychologist. I didn't like having group therapy. And so I convinced my friends one afternoon when I was really not happy with this person that maybe what we ought to do is just not say anything in group therapy. And after about 5 minutes, he figured out we weren't going to say anything, and he walked out. And the director of the agency came in and wanted to know what us kids had done to annoy him. So I was in trouble. I was figuratively grounded, I guess you might say. So when I was 20, I left Hawaii and I went and I moved to Minnesota. I had a girlfriend from Minnesota, and so that attracted me to go there. But I'm not married to that person now. I'm married to somebody else that I met in Minnesota. And we've been married for a very, very long time, 46 years, I think, this year. And I finally decided what I wanted to do with my life. And so I went to school and I learned how to program computers and ultimately got myself a job with the state of Minnesota and then a private industry for 17 years doing technical support and helping other people to solve problems. And then in 1997, the Federation, in the person of Kenneth Jernigan, offered me a job to go to work in Baltimore. And the first time he made that offer, my daughter, whose name is Tina, was 100% sighted, and she was in high school and she was a junior. And so I said, no, I don't want to come to work for you, because I do not want to have to uproot my daughter out of the high school that she already knows. And so a year later to the day, he called me up and and said he wanted me to come to Baltimore. So I agonized about it with Peggy, my wife, who some of you may know as the blind history lady. And she and I agreed it was time to move. So we went to Maryland. We stayed there for 5 years, and then we had enough and moved to Iowa. And then I got stuck in the rehabilitation field as a professional, quote unquote, for about 15 years. And then I retired. So right now I am retired. I've been retired for 4 years, but somehow or other, I've been quite busy doing stuff. And my primary focuses within the last 4 years have been, number one, helping people in my state to have fully accessible voting. Number two, working with people who are way older than I am to deal with the conundrums of the technology that the world is forcing them to have to use if they want to get anything done. And number three, because of the pandemic for me was actually a huge plus because I learned more about how to host and organize and set up Zoom meetings than I would ever have learned if I'd had to do that during the normal time. So, here in Colorado, I'm pretty much the Zoom in charge of our state convention, which last year was a hybrid convention, so people could come in person or they could participate by Zoom. And I've also done, I did a hybrid just a couple days ago because our dear friend Scott LaBarre passed away, and so last Saturday was his celebration of life. And so I had a nice team of people working with me so that we could do both audio and video and have the Zoom presenters be available. So that's essentially the sum and substance of my background. So I'm very good at a very small set of technology, and I'm very bad at cooking in the kitchen. But I do know how to take out garbage, and I do know how to wash dishes and clean. Right?
Then that's good.
Yeah. My solution for cooking is to make a phone call. or as my wife Peggy likes to say, I'm very good at making reservations.
There you go. Very good.
So tech is my thing. And I, because I was working in the rehabilitation field, I had some opportunities also to teach people how to use technology. And that experience taught me a couple of things about how to work with people, how to help them to deal with technology. Because, I don't know, the stereotypical thinking about people who are good at technology is, number one, they must be geniuses and like super smart. Number two, they probably have a very bad, nerdy type personality. And number three, don't expect them to teach you how to do anything because they're terrible teachers. All right. Now, I would like to think that I'm a pretty good teacher of technology, and I have a couple of people I could drag out of the woodwork who will tell you from direct personal experience that I did, in fact, teach them something, which makes me feel good. And I will be one of the first people whenever I look at anything new to technology. You might find this surprising, but I am a slow adopter of new technologies that I haven't had any experience with. I do not just jump out and say, ooh, look, let's get this. So, for example, the iPhone. Now, I don't know how many of you guys are actually using the iPhone or any phone with a touch screen. But I remember the talking iPhone, I think, came out in 2009, and it took me 2 years to get to the place where I decided that it was time for me to get one. And I read books about it, you know, other blind people who did a much better job of sharing written information than I did put together books. Many of those books, by the way, I got from the National Braille Press. In Boston, Massachusetts, you might think that all you can get from them is Braille, but in fact, no, you can get books from them in electronic format, like in Microsoft Word or plain text or whatever. And so I read these books and I talked to blind people who were much more bold and adventurous in a lot of ways than I was about the iPhone before I took the plunge. And so I think one time during that time, I wrote an article about knowing what the pluses and the minuses were for the iPhone, because believe me, there are a ton of both. There's good things about the iPhone and there are bad things about the iPhone. And one of the bad things about the iPhone is that if you're a blind person who wants physical buttons and controls that you can feel to push, or if you want to be able to operate your phone with one hand, the touch screens do not give you that. From a non-visual blindness point of view, if you touch the screen of an iPhone, think of it as being in a vast wasteland with no landmarks whatsoever, right? That's how I used to think of the iPhone. Because the sense of touch, when you touch that smooth screen, tells you that, hey, here's a smooth piece of glass covered up maybe by a screen protector, but there's nothing there. So when I would say to a student who I'm trying to teach how to use the iPhone, put your finger near the lower left corner of the screen, and they would say, okay, where is that?
Oh, boy.
I mean, it's right? They would say, where is that?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think of the screen as being perfectly smooth, there's no marks anywhere. So if you're forced or if you choose to learn how to use the iPhone, one of the things that it helps to get better at using the iPhone is to recognize that, yes, it is a smooth piece of glass or smooth screen with no landmarks on it. But if you can find an edge, like the left edge, the top edge, the bottom edge of the phone, that gives you orientation well enough so that you can find, you know, like if somebody says, put your finger on the screen near the bottom left corner. And in a lot of ways, you know, people think, well, just teach me how to use the phone. All I want to do is I want to know how to use the phone. And I always stop and I say to them, no, we're first of all going to talk about how do I know where approximately my finger is going to be when I'm going to touch the screen. Because the one thing I notice new people do is they make a fist and they stick out one finger, the pointer finger, and they just try to move that. But none of their other fingers are touching anything except they're clenched, you know, like in a fist. So one of the first tips I'm going to tell you, if you don't already know this, is the best way to do the iPhone is to hold it so that you're using both hands. And the way I do it, since I'm a right-handed person, is I put the phone on the palm of my left hand and I grip the left side of the phone to my thumb, and all the rest of my left-hand fingers are on the right side, near the top of the phone, away from the buttons, because you don't want to be pushing buttons when you're doing this. And then when I take my right hand, I use my index finger. You can use any finger you want, but I try to hold the bottom part of the phone with some other fingers so that I have a point to anchor against so that I know, am I moving more toward the left, toward the bottom, or the top? Now, I would be, you know, this is the problem, of course, with Zoom, is I can't really hear from people about how many of you, you know, already do this without thinking.
But we'll get that at the end.
Yeah, right. That's fine. Okay, that's good. So the first use of the phone is, of course, to recognize that, yes, there's a whole bunch of learning that has to be done. And the best way to do it is to talk to people who are already using the phone. And it has to be the right kind of person. It has to be somebody who's willing to share their information and is also able to use plain English to explain what's happening. Okay? Because, and I regret to say, you know, that, and this is true, that I've, you know, people say, I want, you know, training centers for the blind, for example, they want to hire smart people who understand and feel comfortable with technology. But the part that they sometimes miss is they don't evaluate the person's ability actually to pass on what they know to other people, which in my opinion is probably more important than being a nerd with the technology, okay? So if you're talking to somebody who really is, you know, okay, my daughter is a classic example. I love my daughter a lot. I'm very proud of her. She's making way more money than I ever made in my life. And I often like to brag about her and say that, yeah, she's got her name on a co-patent with Target and all that good stuff. But she can't teach you anything. She's a terrible teacher. She has no patience with people who don't understand stuff. And she has no patience with, you know, even though she grew up with blind parents, she has no patience with blind people who are less independent than her dad and her mom. Okay. That's not the kind of tech trainer you want. So once you get past that, then you think, what are the most important, if I'm going to use speech on my iPhone, what are the most important things I have to know? Well, the first thing is that while sighted people may just touch an icon on the screen that says phone, touching that icon with your finger on the iPhone is not going to do anything except that VoiceOver will say the name of the icon. Okay.
1:15 p.m.
Okay, so for example, I just brought up my home screen. Now you tell me if I'm turning the volume up and tell me if you can hear this. So I'm on my home screen and I'm just taking my finger. I'm going to touch anywhere in the middle.
Downcast.
So you heard it say downcast.
Yep.
That is the icon that VoiceOver is currently focused on. Now, if I take my finger and touch any place else, like let's say near the top, very tippy top left corner.
1:16 p.m. Status bar item.
1:16 p.m. status bar item. So you see, as soon as you touch anywhere with one finger on the screen, VoiceOver's attention, for want of a better word, gets yanked away from the downcast icon on the screen, all the way to the top left corner. And so VoiceOver is very fickle in that regard, because anytime you touch anything on the screen with one finger, his attention or its attention immediately gets yanked away from the last thing that you heard. And in order to add to this confusion, if you accidentally touch the screen with another part of your body, and so two things touch the screen, the phone is going to think that you want to activate an icon. That gesture is, in a technical term, is referred to as a
you be quiet.
Not you guys. So the idea here is that it's called the split tap. That's Apple's definition. So you could slide your finger around the screen like I'm going to do right now.
Daptune and Radio. Draft App Store. Google Calendar. iNote.
I'm just sliding now.
Tune and Radio.
And if I'm in a blank section, I hear this.
Weather.
So I've got a bunch of blank stuff on my screen when I slide below and you hear the phone going bup, 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 bup. Okay, but if while I touch the weather icon with one finger and I leave my finger there, if I then take accidentally a second finger and touch anywhere else on the screen, the phone thinks I want to bring up the weather program. So I always say to people, try your darndest, unless you really mean to do this, not to touch the screen with any other digit of your hand except the one finger. Okay? Now, new people to the iPhone, I've noticed, they get the idea that you can slide your finger around and hear what the icons are. But many screens on the iPhone have lots of white space because sighted people or people who can see the screen, they like having space on the screen. And so when I hear somebody going like this, I know what they're trying to do is they're trying to find an icon that they can activate. So am I making sense so far? Because if I'm not, I want to know right away that the feedback is like, I don't know what they're
doing. Fine.
Okay, good. So the first gesture I teach is the slide, like I'm doing right now. And then I talk about how fast you have, you know, we call this thing we call it a double tap. That means you double tap the screen with one finger. How fast do you have to double tap? Well, if you think of the word double, right, that's the rhythm. Double, unless you've made adjustments to your iPhone settings. So let's see if the microphone picks this up, right? Dun, dun, like that. That's how fast your one finger has to do a double tap. Now, there is a timer on the iPhone, which Apple, in its infinite wisdom, I shouldn't say infinite, but in its sometimes infinite wisdom, has it available so that you can say, how fast do I want a double tap to be recognized? The default, I think, is 1/4 of a second, but you can raise that up to something. If you have dexterity issues and your hands don't do the bonk, bonk, you can slow it down so that you can go thump, bump, you know, and you can like half a second if you want. So one of the things that you want to think about is, how fast can I do a double tap? Because the double tap is a gesture that you will use with VoiceOver 1,000 times a day. Okay. Bonk, bonk. Dun, dun. Right? So now I have a person that I work with, for example, who is very good at knocking on doors. And believe it or not, this person, when I say do a double tap, they do exactly that. They go like they're knocking on somebody's door. But you know what? For them, it works. Right? I don't care. As long as it works. The trick is to make sure that only that knuckle touches the screen and nothing else. Otherwise, the phone will get confused. Okay? Now, we talked about sliding with one finger, and that's what a lot of beginners do on the iPhone. But one gesture that I think is really important and which is generally called a flick. If any of you guys have watched Christmas Story, you remember the name flick, right? But if you haven't, doesn't matter. The flick gesture is kind of like, I don't know what's next, but I'm touching a part of the screen and I want to go to the next item that either is to the right or down below. What do I do? You don't have to slide in order to get to the next item. If you take one finger and flick either to the left or right. Now remember what I talked about orientation, right? How you hold the phone. So you hold the phone so that the top is facing away from you and the bottom is toward you. And the left side where the volume controls are is to your left and the power button is on the right. If you flick with one finger to the left or right, the phone will move immediately to the first icon on the screen that it can find in whichever direction you flicked. So right now, since I touched near the bottom of the phone, if I flick to the right, I think I'm going to get
page 1 of 4, adjustable.
I'm on the home screen, right? And if anybody knows anything about the iPhone, you know the home screen is divided up into 4 sections. There's the status bar at the top with the time and the battery. There's all your icons in the middle. And there's this thing that says what page are you on below that. And below that, you got what's called the dock. So if I flick again to the right, I get
phone, 2 new items.
Phone, 2 new items. Wow, there's 2 calls. I guess I got to return at some point. And if I flick right again,
messages, 3 unread messages.
So right now I know I'm in the dock because I know that phone, messages, and my clock are at the bottom of the phone because that's where I put it. But if I don't want to be down there and I want to get near the top, I just take my finger and touch. Remember I said you can just touch
settings
near the top left. And I just told VoiceOver, I don't want to look at the bottom anymore. I want you to look near the top. And so I just took my finger and I touched up there. And now I can start flicking to the right to hear other icons.
Utilities folder, 49, web page 1 of 4, adjustable.
Whoops, I made a mistake.
Settings, utilities folder, 49 apps, 3 new items. Radio folder, 4 apps. Navigation folder, 5 apps.
Okay, so I did a terrible job of flicking because I unintentionally touched the bottom of the screen between flicks, and that caused VoiceOver to behave very badly. So I just want you to know that that's even the most seasoned iPhone user will do stuff like that, and that's perfectly fine. One of the things, too, that maybe people don't know is if my phone starts chattering away and I don't want it to keep talking, what do I do? So I'm going to start my phone chattering away, and then I'm going to show you that I can make it stop.
Settings, utilities folder, 49 apps, 3 new items, radio folder, 4 apps.
No, I want it to shut up.
5 apps. Ooh.
How did I do that? Mm-hmm. I didn't use the famous echo command, which is echo stop. Isn't that the most frequently used command of the Amazon Echo? The way you get the phone to shut up right in the middle of a phrase or whatever is to take 2 fingers and just tap the screen once. That's all you have to do. 2 fingers, tap it once, and the phone will be quiet in about 1/4 of a second.
Settings, utilities folder.
See, that's how fast you can do it. So 2 fingers tapped once on the screen anywhere, it doesn't matter where, will do this. Now, let's back up and talk about the flick a little bit. The thing that you don't have to worry about is if I'm flicking, and I hear a VoiceOver say something. So, for example, I want to flick to messages.
Messages. 3 unread messages.
Okay, so I tapped to messages, and it said 3 unread messages, and I took my hand off the screen. Do you have to double tap in the same exact spot? Yes or no? Pop quiz. The answer is no. That's correct. Once you've taken your hand off the screen, the last thing VoiceOver said is where VoiceOver's attention is focused. So now you can take your single finger and go tap, tap, anywhere.
Messages, edit button.
And my messages app just opened up, just like that. And now my screen has completely changed. So if you're thinking about which gestures for VoiceOver are the most important, I've probably given you the top 3 right away that you have to worry about. And the one last one I'm going to talk about is the one that everybody calls the magic tap. What is the magic tap? The magic tap is what you use if you want to answer a phone call or hang up. And that is a double tap with two fingers, right? So two-finger double tap to answer, two-finger double tap to hang up. And let me explain a little bit about what happens when you are on a phone call. Because this is the part that throws, you know, remember, why did you get a phone in the first place? Well, because we want to make a phone call. We want to be able to answer a phone call. That's what we want to do. So you hear ring, 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 you get a phone call. You take your two fingers and do your magic double tap with the two fingers. And the screen completely changes now so that it's a completely different screen. But now you're online with the person that you want to talk to. And with VoiceOver running, the phone has this interesting feature where if you hold the phone up to your ear the way you normally hold the phone, VoiceOver's camera, the phone's camera sees your head there and goes, oh my, what an ugly head. And then it cuts off the speaker and you can hear the person talking through the little speaker that's at the top of your screen. But if you pull the phone away from your head and lay it flat so that the screen faces the ceiling, then the phone says, no head, no ugly person there. Now I'm going to switch over to the speaker. And in my case, what I do is I just wave my hand over the top of the phone instead of, I don't bring it up to my head. Like I just wave my hand over the top and the phone sees the hand go away and it switches immediately to speaker. And then I don't have to hold the phone up anymore if I don't want to. But that's how you go between having a speaker that everybody can hear versus private listening is just put the phone up by your ear and then the speaker will cut out and then you'll be able to talk to people normally. And then if you want to switch to speaker, take the phone away. And if you want to hang up, the best way to do it is to pull the phone away from your head and aim the screen toward the ceiling and then do the magic two-finger double tap to hang up. So let me give you some miscellaneous things for those of you who are already deep into the iPhone. If you've been using an iPhone for a long time, one of the things you know is that the time between September and December of every year is probably the worst time in your life dealing with the iPhone, because that's when Apple comes up with major updates that cause more bugs to pop up that we didn't know anything about before that. So between the middle to the end of September till the probably the end of the year, your phone may or may not behave in an erratic fashion, and you might need therapy to deal with it, because this is when Apple is introducing all the new, they come up with new versions of what they call iOS. And just to show you how old the iPhone is, this year we're on iOS 16, right? And if they started with iOS 1, you can imagine how many years it's been. And we're, as of last Monday, they came out with iOS 16.3, which I highly recommend most people get, because that's where a lot of the bugs get fixed. So by January, whatever update comes out in January will usually, not always, but will usually fix all the crazy things that the phone has done. And so that's when if you can hold off doing updates, that's when you really want to do the update. Really, if you're one of those people who just cannot tolerate or doesn't want to be bothered with all the crazy bugs, just wait and wait. And yes, let the phone bug you over and over again, because it will. It will bug you over and over. Hey, you got this update. Hey, you got this update. Hey, and it will bother you over and over again. But you can stand tough. You can hold true. And then when your friends tell you that it's okay, then you can go ahead and do the update. But when I say that the iPhone is a computer in your pocket, I am seriously meaning that to be true, both in a good and a bad way. If you like working with computers and you think computers are cool, then the iPhone can be cool. But if you're one of those technologically intolerant or not confident people, and you know, to you technology is a big burden, you're going to have the burden of the iPhone if you're going to use an iPhone, because it is a computer. It is, you can carry it in your purse or your pocket, and like any computer, it's subject to bugs, it's subject to updates, it's subject to fixes and problems that are created by programmers, some of whom live in an ivory tower and who do not communicate very well with real people. Okay, so and iPhone, the iPhone number 10, of course, Apple did one thing which a lot of people who are blind did not like, which is they got rid of the home button. And so I hear people who are thinking about buying new phones, I don't like not having a home button. I have to have the home button. And we're lucky in a lot of ways that Apple is continuing to make models of the iPhone that have a home button on them for those people who want it. 2 years ago, I made the decision to get an iPhone 12 mini, which doesn't have a home button. I was jumping from an 8 all the way up to the Model 12 because I work with people who are making the transition. And one of the things that people hated about the iPhone when it got rid of the home button was instead of using a fingerprint for identification, now they use Face ID. And then they got rid of the home button. So what do you do? Well, when I first got my iPhone 12 mini, I just want to tell you, I got real frustrated with Face ID not working on my phone. So in frustration, I called up one of my friends who is one of my customers, actually, who I help fix technological problems. And I said, man, this thing is really stupid. I don't know. I just don't think Face ID is going to work for me. And this person said to me, I've been using Face ID for 2 years. I don't understand what your problem is. So I got knocked down a peg or two by that. So now I use a phone with no home button, and I do Face ID, and I don't even think about it anymore. It's totally automatic and totally reflexive. And so people who agonize over this and come to me and say, well, I really want to keep the home button. I say, well, there are options. You can still keep the home button for less money than if you bought one of the newer phones. That's true. But there's going to come a time when Apple will get rid of it. So when do you want to bite the bullet? Do you want to bite it now? Or do you want to bite it later? Because one of these days, you're probably going to have to, as long as you want to keep using the iPhone. And of course, there are people who have said to me, I don't want to keep using the iPhone. Is there another alternative? And of course, some of you may have heard about the Blind Shell Classic 2, which is designed specifically for the blind. It has real buttons on it. You can do email with it. You can text with it. You can listen to FM radio with it. And coincidentally, you can make and receive phone calls too, just in case you're wondering. But, and by the way, the Blind Shell Classic 2 does support now Aira. Maybe some of you guys don't know about Aira. And it does support now Bard for the Library of Congress, for the audio books. So those two things are there. But what it doesn't support is Uber or Lyft. So if you're wanting to use your iPhone to do transportation, unfortunately, the Blind Shell Classic 2, which would be really helpful for some of us who just don't like touch screens, isn't there yet. But maybe it will be one of these days. We'll have to see. Anyhow.
This is Judy. That's when you get go-go grandparent.
Yes, that's true. And like everything else in life, go-go grandparent is a very fabulous service. I've seen people use it to great effect. It's expensive. Yes, that's right. But some people are willing to pay for the expense because to them, the pain of using an iPhone is much more significant than the money they would spend using Go-Go Grandparent. So
I feel the pain.
Yeah, but that's okay. I mean, you know, because there's a lot of value, honestly, in having another person handle all the little finicky details of your transportation, who will call you when the car is coming and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they can even communicate with the driver, you know, and all that stuff using your Uber or Lyft account. And that works tremendously. So there are a lot of enthusiastic people who use Go-Go Grandparent, who use the Blind Shell. I just want people to go into that decision with, as the rehabilitation people like to say, to have informed choice, which is misused grossly in the industry, I'm sorry to say. But I do think people should understand what your pros and cons are for making whatever decision you're going to make. And then you decide which pros and which cons you want to deal with versus the pros and cons I want to deal with. And so before I open it up to bigger questions, I want to say one thing that I think is highly, highly important for me to say. People come up to me and they say, I'm not as smart as you are. I feel so stupid that I don't know how to do technology. There must be something wrong with me, they say. And so I've started, when I write about this, when I talk about this, I try not to put intelligence on the same yardstick as technology, because I firmly believe that everybody has a form of intelligence that differs from person to person. So I once knew Dr. Betsy Zaborowski, bless her soul, who was a PhD in psychology and a very, very smart lady about psychology. Terrible with technology. And she would say, you know, I really feel so stupid because I can't do the stuff that you just do automatically. And I said, but look, Doc, you think differently about stuff than I do. I'm really interested in sequences and the steps you have to do this and, if you know, and not missing a step when I operate stuff. You're thinking more broadly about stuff. And does that mean that you're less intelligent than I am? And the answer is no. What it means is that, number one, I'm a linear thinker. I can think in sequence, and it doesn't bother me to do that. And number two, I feel comfortable using technology or learning how to use technology, and you don't. Mm-hmm. Does that make you a bad person? Does it make you a dumb person or a less intelligent person? Absolutely not. And those technology people who come around and tell you that you're really stupid because you can't use the iPhone, I'm going to tell you, you just tell them to shut up and go away, because your intelligence lies in something that they're absolutely probably not good at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I use terms like technologically proficient, technologically confident, not technologically smart or stupid, because to me, that's the wrong scale to be
Touché.
Looking at this. And I think we also should recognize one big thing. Technology is designed by people who do not think the way the vast majority of the population thinks. And in some respects, that's a good thing. But in one respect, it's not. They cannot conceive of people not knowing how to do the things that they know and that they just take for granted. And that's when they design stuff, they make huge and wrong assumptions about what the average customer is going to be able to do when that product that they're working on hits the market. And unless or until we can get the people who build this stuff to recognize that one of the most important design things they have to do is to figure out how ordinary people are going to use it before it leaves the factory, we're going to continue to get technology that's hard to use, difficult, frustrating, and problematic because the developers do not know how to recognize what ordinary human beings truly understand. And I think that's what I call that is a design issue, which won't go away until the powers that be recognize that as a part of design, they have to have ordinary people. So take Peggy Chong, the blind history lady. She uses a computer every day. She does research every day. She's terrible with technology. Anything goes wrong with it, she gets frustrated. And so it's the honey come here method that she uses to solve her technology.
Honeydew.
Issues, yes. The honeydew thing, right? That doesn't mean she's stupid. It just means that there's a problem that she doesn't have the knowledge and experience or the temperament or the tolerance to attack on her own. And that's perfectly fine, because if she was somebody else, I could charge them an inordinate amount of money to fix something that they don't know how to fix, which is fine for now for me. But I am on this. I want to hammer home the point that we as a society should begin to insist that people who develop stuff for our benefit better learn how to start thinking the way ordinary people do. And I hope one day that will happen. And it's true, by the way, also of the blindness products that we use all the time, that we are still dependent on. Things like screen readers, things like Braille devices, things like screen magnifiers or, you know, those CCTVs and all. Those ought to be designed with humans in mind. And I'm not talking about engineer humans, but just ordinary users. And the iPhone wasn't designed by ordinary people, right? Let's get real. It's just that us ordinary people have had to suck it up and deal with it on its own terms or not use the iPhone at all. So I'm open, Jane.
Very good. I just want to say a couple of comments. Your comment about technologically proficient, the word I use is affinity. I'm a musician. And so people will say to me, oh, you play the music, you know, you're so excellent in that and wonderful. Well, I have an affinity for that. Now, if you put me on a basketball court, I'm terrible. So everybody has their own affinities and you have to know what yours are. And don't get frustrated because your affinity is different than someone else's. That's the one point. And the other point I wanted to share is in addition to Blind Shell, there's another similar one called Mini Vision 2 Plus, which is with also tactile and also has some of the similar features as blind shells. So if you're looking into something like that with tactile, take into consideration both before you purchase. And I think we're going to open it up the floor because Curtis gave us a lot to think about in a beautifully scripted or an unscripted way of thinking. And so let's see how many hands we have. And if our host can help us with that, that would be great. Right. And wait to be recognized to take the floor, and you can ask whatever questions you want in the next 15, 20 minutes.
Right now we have one, which would be Gloria.
Gloria, our winner today.
Well, thank you. Yes, this is Gloria. And Curtis, thank you for a wonderful presentation. I was on earlier at the 2:30 hour when you came on. I am one of those people that was fully sighted for most of my life. And I am now a senior about your age, losing vision. And I used to have an Android with a home button. Took me a long time to get into a smartphone because I was, you know, like, what do I need it for? Once I got the Android with a home button, it was great. But in 2019, I realized that my vision was not good enough and I needed to take the next step. And for a variety of reasons, I chose the iPhone. So... And I got the iPhone 10 with no home button. I want to encourage anyone who is afraid of the iPhone. There is help out there, and you can do it. Every day for 6 months, I wanted to throw this phone against the wall or out the window. It was tough to learn. Also, Curtis, in my neck of the country, we don't flick, we swipe. Just a
little bit. Okay.
Do it a little differently. But you can do it. If you want to do it, you can do it. At this point, my iPhone is my absolute most important tool for virtually everything. So please don't be afraid of the iPhone. Now, very, very critical, the most important phone number in your contact list needs to be Apple Accessibility. This is a 24/7 helpline. It is free. You have a problem, you call them up, you say, help me. They can mirror what's on your screen. They can help you, and they've helped me several times get out of some sticky situations. So anyway, Apple Accessibility, put that number into your contacts. Don't be afraid of the phone. Yeah, you're going to hate it for a while, but it's going to be your most important friend.
Very good. Thank you very much. That was Apple will be very happy to know that. Any other hands raised?
No, not at this time.
Oh, so one of the techniques I like to share is trying to teach seniors to use their phone, and they try and utilize whatever little vision they have. And I believe she's on this call, so I'm not going to embarrass her with this, but she came to my house. We had a book club and we were reading, and she brought her phone with her. And I see her hold, I have enough vision to see that she's holding it, and her eyes, her face is towards it. I can't see what she's looking at. I'm like, what are you doing? She says, I'm trying to find the icon. And I said, okay, give me your phone. And I did a 3-finger triple tap, which puts your screen curtain on. And I said, now you're going to use it like a blind person. And now we're going to help you learn. And that's how she learned. And I think it helped her out a lot. So that's just one little tidbit. If you have somebody that is relying on some usable vision to focus and squeeze their eyes, and then they get squinted and they get a headache, just put the screen curtain on and let them feel around with their finger and swipe to the left, and, or excuse me, flick, if you will. Anyway, that's my little 2 cents. Michael, okay. Do you have anything to add about any of this?
Well, hold on. I'm going to give she mentioned Apple Accessibility, so I happen to have the phone number right in front of me. And I'll give it to those people who can write it down. So it's 877, not 800. 877-204-3930. 877-204-3930. Call before midnight tonight, and the operators will send you a free gift. Not.
Okay. We do have one hand raised, but before we go to him, I want to say that I remember the swipe or flick. I'm personally a swiper.
Me too.
I learned that it was hard to explain. Some people couldn't get what you were saying. So I said, imagine just brushing something off your pants. You spilled some crumbs on your pants. And
with
that,
one finger.
Yep. That's one finger. That seemed to help get the point across. And Bernie, your hand up, sir.
Well, hang on. The other thing I forgot to mention was that there is a feature in the iPhone which you can do. It's called lock orientation. All of us who've used the iPhone have turned that on. It's so that when you tilt the phone sideways, the screen doesn't automatically shift to orient, you know, to between portrait and landscape. And so you want to lock orientation on your phone so that it stays always in the portrait mode, regardless of the angle that you do. And one more thing, when people hear about the rotor, where you turn a knob or whatever, my advice is just turn the phone. It's easier to turn than it is to turn your wrist or do whatever. So next question, as they say.
Hey, this is Bernie from Richmond, Virginia. Thanks, Curtis, for your presentation. I'm enjoying it. Can you give me your opinion on the Apple Watch and tell me why I need one or don't need one?
I can't because I don't have one, and so my knowledge and experience in this area, unfortunately, is quite lacking. I see people who are quite enthused about it. For example, my sighted daughter has an Apple Watch, so she can put her boarding pass on the plane, you know, on the scanner thing. Me personally, I still get paper boarding passes because I think it's less likely to fail. it's like a remote version of your iPhone with a much, much smaller screen. And I personally am not finding any value in it. But having said that, I'm not going to degrade anybody who says they find it useful, because that's a personal choice. So I'm not excited about it, but don't let that sway you. If you should really have people demonstrate it. I will point out, just because it's a reality, that there, now you have a second computer that's on your body, and you're going to have to worry about updates to both of them, not just the phone, but now the watch. It's not like a wristwatch that you never get updated or changed. It's going to be subject to the very same problems of Apple introducing updates that might or might not be a problem. And so you decide how much pain and frustration you want to put up. I personally think the screen is a bit small, even for a totally blind person. People have asked me, too, what do you think about getting an iPad? And my answer is, for a totally blind person, an iPad is of absolutely no value whatsoever. The larger screen doesn't help me at all. Now, and it will help low vision people. That's true. So don't be put off by this. And finally, for those people who absolutely get so tired of the keyboard, right? I didn't mention this touchy subject. The keyboard of the iPhone, entering passwords, typing text, replying to emails. What are some alternatives that you can do if you simply cannot deal with this tiny little keyboard? Well, let me tell you, for non-Braille users, Logitech makes this $30 keyboard called a K380. It's battery powered, two AAA batteries, actually. And so any place that you have to type on your phone, you can use the keyboard. And it doesn't fit in your purse, but it's pretty compact and pretty small. And the keys feel nice when you touch them. They have little indents in the middle, so your fingers go to the middle. And so as long as you know your punctuation and your letters of the alphabet, as soon as you get into a place where you have to type something, then switch over, you know, turn the keyboard on. It's got a physical on-off switch so that you know when it's on and off by touch, and use that for typing. So $30 will get you away from having to use the physical touch, the tiny little keyboard on the screen of the iPhone. Also works on iPads, too, and you can connect up to three different devices to it and switch channels between them. Those of us that know Braille, this has been another experience that actually did surprise me. Most of the Braille people whom I ask about typing Braille on the screen of the iPhone have said to me that they couldn't get it to work. I don't understand why. It's probably a deficiency in my thinking, because I will tell you that I don't know what I would do if I could not do Braille on the screen of my iPhone to enter, you know, stuff where I have to type. It's one of the most wonderful things that Apple has done in terms of innovation that I can think of, other than making the touchscreen accessible to us. And for those of us that have gotten it to work, it's a nice way to have Braille on my phone so that I don't have to carry around another device when I want to travel light.
Mm-hmm.
So So anyway, next.
We have Ada on the iPad.
Ada Crandall on the iPad.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm visually impaired. I started losing my sight several years ago. My iPhone has been like a secretary for me. And I thank you for your presentation. I thank you for your comments earlier, because you're ever so right. Fighting eye loss when you've had eyesight is a struggle on some days. But one of the things that has helped me is a lot. I do work a lot with the screen curtain on. And it was probably me my darling sister was talking about. I don't know if she's talking about me or not. But
it was.
and a lot of times I just work with the curtain because I'm losing eyesight in the process. Mine is going gradually and it's changing. It might be one way today. 3 days later, it might be different. So the screen curtain works for me. And I recommend it to anybody who's losing your eyesight. If you're not afraid, put your screen curtain on. It'll help you when you do get to that point. You won't be afraid because it's helped me so much. And, you know, it's great. So anybody who is losing sight, I just want to let you know. It's a struggle to start out with this curtain on, but it will help you in the long run because it's helping me. Because the more sight I lose, the better it is for me on with the screen curtain on.
Wow, okay. The hands are going up. Look at that.
Yeah. All right.
Nancy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ada. Who's next?
Nancy.
Nancy Yeager. You have the floor, honey. Are you unmuted, though?
She's still muted.
Should we go to the next one and come back to her?
Yeah, we'll go to Shelley.
Thank you. And we'll come back to you, honey. Don't worry. We only have 6 minutes left, I think. So go ahead, honey.
Okay. My question had to do with the Braille on the screen. I did not realize. Now that you say that, I think I've heard of it. But is that I've never done that. That would be awesome because I hate the, you know, hunt and peck version of entering things little keyboard.
So Shelley, are you a Braille person?
I'm a Braille user. Oh yeah.
And I will tell you that even for those of you who say you can't feel the Braille dots because you have neuropathy or something, knowing how to enter Braille, and I'm a lifelong Braille user since I was 5. The Braille people may laugh at this, but I write on my iPhone in uncontracted Braille, so with no contractions. And the reason I do that is because I want to make sure that the letter I typed actually is entered into the phone. And it works for everything except passwords, of course. Password, you just get a click, 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 right? And the thing that the iPhone did, which I thought was fabulous, you know, I don't think they meant to be fabulous about this, but you know when those of you who try to enter a password, don't you find that it's nicer to have, I mean, there's the keyboard at the bottom of the screen, and it will tell you what letter your finger's on before you, you know, activate the thing so that you can verify that you're about to enter the right character, number, or symbol into your password field. Nobody else has given us that feature, even the computer. When I'm on the computer with my screen reader, I get no feedback at all about even with echo characters on as to what letter I have typed. But at least on the iPhone, I can slide my finger to the right letter and I'll know, is it capitalized or is it not, before I can decide, do I want to register that letter as part of my password, yes or no. So kudos for the accidental thing. So a Braille screen input, Shelley. If somebody will, I can write down your email now if you want to share it, or you can tell Jane or somebody, and I will. I have an article I stole off of Apple Viz that I would be happy to send you that gives you the basics, how to get it set up, how to use it.
Well, that'd be cool. Kind of stuff. No, I don't mind telling you my email.
Okay, go ahead.
It's all names and it's all written out lowercase.
Okay,
Frank and A-N-D Shelley with an E-Y.
Two L's.
Yeah, Lley,
yep.
51 at gmail.com.
Everybody's on Gmail now. Google's
Frank and Shelley 51 at gmail.com.
Frank and Shelley 51 at gmail.com.
Very good.
Okay, good. I will take care of it in 5 minutes.
Sure. Okay, thank you, Shelley.
Sure.
Who's next? Nancy? Did you unmute yourself?
Still muted. So do you want to go to Judith Ray?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. What is the phone number again? It's 877-204-3930.
3930.
You got it. And whatever information, I enjoyed what you what you said and what you did in this presentation, because I can almost figure out how to do some things on the phone and figure out what I've been doing wrong. But whatever you send out, you can send it to me as well.
Got it.
Phone number and whatever you just said you send out to the previous person.
Everybody's going to get, everybody will probably get a lot of these resources when we do our follow-up.
Shelly will put
okay,
it in the
Okay, so you email
list.
It? Or are you going, how
we're
are you going to send it?
A thumb drive.
Yeah.
Thumb drive. Oh,
right.
Okay.
We need to move on. There's a few more people before we have to.
So 3930.
30,
yeah,
you got
but,
it.
But we're, so we're going to go on to the next person because we don't have a lot of time left here.
You got it.
Well, which is?
Thank you.
Who's next? Eleanor. I didn't see her up there. Okay. Eleanor.
Yes, this is me. I want you to send me that too. My email address.
Eleanor, we're not requesting things right now because everybody's going to get this. Okay?
Okay, because I don't think you have my email address. I think you have Joanne's, but that's okay.
Well, let's not deal with that on this call.
Right.
I want to state one thing real quick before we close here, because Curtis mentioned the keyboard. You can do a lot of things with your iPhone and keyboard, almost every function. So if you are proficient at the keyboard, maybe you're already a great Windows user and the touchscreen throws you, you can do a lot with that keyboard. So you could get the one Curtis recommended. There's a few different ones. There's one called Zag. So there's a few different ones that you can do very affordably, and there's a whole list, and I'm going to send that to Janie to include as well. So,
but you know, one of the things, Michael, that I have noticed about the documentation for keyboards is if you already are quite familiar with the gestures, if you found something that does this better, let me know. But so here's where I need to learn something, because everything I look up says, if you want to scroll to the next page, press this key. If you want to, you know, it's all based on function and not on gestures. And I was longing for a document that would say, if you want to swipe up, down, left, or right with three fingers, here are the keystrokes for that. If you want to swipe up or down with two fingers, or left or right with two fingers, here's the keystrokes for that. If you want to do a triple tap, here's the keystroke. If you want to do the magic tap, right? who does it? Nobody does it. Nobody that I've found does it that way, right? And so I wrote it up myself, and I made a document, and I share it with anybody who wants it, because I figure if you already know the gestures, you just want to know what keystrokes do the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know.
Okay, we are running out of time.
Well, thank you very much for having me, everybody. I was glad to be here.
And I want to thank you too, Curtis, for all that you talked about today and making people feel comfortable at who they are in their own skin. And it's okay. It's okay. And you'll be able to move forward at your own pace when you're ready. And we need to encourage that. So thank you, Curtis, for your kind words and all wisdom that you shared with us today.
You're very welcome.